As if we all haven't had it up to here with commuting and getting around in good weather. Now comes the first snow of the season and we grind to a halt. Because of decades of poor planning and mismanagement, our transportation system, even though that there are some bright spots, is a mess. It has to be upgraded, fixed. If we don't fix it, our economy will also grind to a halt. So, what upgrades and fixes need to be made? And where's the money going to come from to pay for all this? Tolls? More at the pump? Raise fares? Tell us what you think. Email tfs@wshu.org. Tweet at @FullStoryWSHU. Call 1-833-CALL-TFS. The Transportation Conversation, next on The Full Story, right after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. Officials in Northern California say the death toll from the campfire in Butte County now stands at 63 and that the number of missing is rising. NPR's Kirk Siegler reports more than 600 people are now listed as missing.
In less than 2 days, the missing persons list has jumped from about 200 reported missing down to just over 100. And then last night, Butte County Sheriff Corey Honey solemnly reported that an additional 500 people are believed to be missing. When he made that grim announcement, there was an audible gasp in the room. Authorities say there's been a lot of confusion and chaos trying to get a handle on just how many people have died or are reported missing from this, the most destructive and deadly fire in California history. They've never seen a wildfire this devastating. There's still hope that some victims simply just haven't checked in as safe, or maybe they don't know they're considered missing. Kirk Siegler, NPR News, Chico, California.
The Department of Education proposed new rules today for schools dealing with allegations of campus sexual assault and harassment. NPR's Clara Lombardo reports the regulations would narrow the definition of sexual harassment on campuses and grant new rights to the accused.
Some higher education leaders see these as welcome updates after Obama-era guidelines they saw as too broad. The new rules spell out the conditions that must be met before schools are obligated to respond to complaints. They also allow schools to choose whether to use a higher standard of proof while reviewing claims, as long as it's the same standard used for claims against employees and faculty. Victims' rights groups say that the rules discourage students from reporting assault and harassment, and they make it easier for allegations to be ignored. The new rules now go into a public comment period. Claire Lombardo, NPR News, Washington.
At the White House this hour, seven Americans are being honored with the Medal of Freedom. NPR Scott Horsley says those being recognized include outgoing Utah Republican Senator Orrin Hatch and the late Elvis Presley and Babe Ruth.
The Medal of Freedom ceremony is typically a feel-good event. It's an opportunity for the president to recognize allies, salute people of high achievement, and just to surround himself with famous or interesting characters. Researchers who studied the awards, however, say it rarely leads to any serious bump in the president's own political standing.
NPR Scott Horsley. A federal judge has temporarily restored CNN reporter Jim Acosta's White House press credentials. They were revoked by President Trump after a tense press conference. U.S. District Judge Timothy Kelly, who's hearing a lawsuit brought by CNN challenging the revocation, ordered the White House to restore the press credentials until the case is decided. Wall Street is trading in mixed territory at this hour. The Dow is up 141 points at 25,430. The Nasdaq is down 21 points at 7,237. The S&P 500 is up 6 at 2,736. This is NPR.
This is WSHU News. I'm Bill Buckner. Connecticut Governor-elect Ned Lamont announced the membership of his Transition Steering Committee yesterday. It's made up of a diverse group of individuals, including business and labor leaders, as well as some former state officials. WSHU's Ebong Udama reports.
Lamont says his 19-member transition steering committee will help him assemble the talent needed to attract more companies to Connecticut, build vibrant cities, and retain the next generation workforce. He says they will head different policy committees on a range of areas from education and healthcare to government data. The team includes former Connecticut Chief Justice Chase Rogers, Democratic State Representative Chris Rosario of Bridgeport, who chairs the General Assembly's Black and Latino Caucus, and Beth Carrigan, West Hartford's Democratic Deputy Mayor, who was the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit that legalized gay marriage in Connecticut. There's also retired Connecticut State Police Lieutenant J. Paul Vance, a former spokesperson for the agency, Greg Butler, the general counsel of the state's largest utility, Eversource Energy, and Aaron Stewart, the Republican mayor of New Britain, among others. Ebong Udama, WSHU News.
Outgoing Governor Daniel Malloy's budget director has provided Connecticut's governor-elect with a tentative budget. Office of Policy and Management Secretary Ben Barnes on Thursday recommended Lamont cancel some planned tax cuts and lower eligibility for a program that helps seniors pay for Medicare expenses. Lamont faces a $1.7 billion shortfall in January. Weather for this afternoon, windy with sun and some clouds, a snow shower possible over the hillier terrain inland, upper 30s inland, lower 40s at the coast, partly cloudy tonight around 30, and tomorrow mostly sunny, 45 to 50 at the coast, 40 to 45 inland.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Farmers Insurance, committed to helping people understand the ins and outs of insurance so they can prepare for life's ups and downs. Coverage options and more information can be found at farmers.com. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
All right, I hear you. After last night with the snow and the sleet and the wind, you have had it. You've had it with the driving or getting on the bus, getting on the train. You're about ready to blow. Well, that's why we're doing a show about transportation problems. So you can email or tweet us or call us because you know what? It's cheaper than therapy. Welcome to the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. I know many of you want to weigh in on this topic. Normally, this is a hot topic, but really, after last night and what went on, it's something else. Let us know what you're thinking about fixing our transportation problems and whether you think tolls and increasing fares is the right way to do it. Three ways to reach us. Voicemail is 833-CALL-TFS. That's 833-225-5837. Email tfs@wshu.org. Tweet at Full Story WSHU. Now, let me say before I get to my guests that I know many of our listeners are on Long Island, and we know that you too have transportation headaches. So right after the Thanksgiving holiday, we'll be speaking with the head of the Permanent Citizens Advisory Council for the MTA. We'll be talking about Metro North and the Long Island Railroad, and as soon as that is scheduled, we will let you know when. Today, a number of guests with me. But before I get to them, I want to bring in on the phone Joe Scully. Joe is the president of the Motor Transport Association of Connecticut. We're getting to Joe quickly because, well, speaking of traveling, he's about to get on a plane. Joe, thank you. Thanks for being with us.
Ron, thank you for having me. And yes, it's ironic. We're talking about transportation and I'm in an airport. So I hope the background noise isn't too much for the listeners.
So far, so good. Your group represents truckers. Connecticut Governor-elect Ned Lamont, he's been talking about putting tolls on the highways, but only for trucks. What do you think?
Yeah, that's what he's been pitching. And I think it's coming from some misconception or a lack of information. For example, many people think that out-of-state trucks come through Connecticut tax-free, which is not true. There are actually a couple of systems in place that allow Connecticut to collect taxes and fees from out-of-state trucks. And recently, as much as $30 million per year have been collected just from out-of-state trucks. The other thing, you know, trucks tear up our roads and bridges. There's no data to support that. In fact, I like to point to something called the Federal Bridge Formula, which ensures that a truck can't inherently damage a road or bridge. And what that program does, it's a federal law which says that a truck's weight has to be spread over a certain number of axles over a certain length. And if you comply with that, you cannot inherently damage a road or a bridge.
Let me ask you a simple question. If the proposal was to put tolls on everyone, cars, trucks, would that be okay with you?
It depends on how they want to do it. And I'll give you an example of what some other states have done. Other states have added what they call new express lanes. This lane did not exist before, so they added the lane and they tolled only that lane. you know, that is not double taxation. That's not discriminatory. It's not regressive. We wouldn't be opposed to something like that. But the study that was released last night, holy smokes, we are adamantly opposed to that as well. 82 toll gantries on literally every highway in the state. No state around us has anything even close to that.
So if you're opposed to that, obviously the roads need fixing, the bridges need fixing. How should the state raise the money to do this?
Well, it's interesting. Secretary Ben Barnes of the Office of Policy and Management earlier this week released consensus revenue numbers, and they showed in part that revenue to the Special Transportation Fund is increasing every year. It is a myth that the Special Transportation Fund has a decline in revenue. It's just not true. Where the deficit comes in is crazy spending on things that don't have anything to do with roads and bridges, chiefly funding pensions and fringe benefits for a number of state agency employees, and spending on transit, and a lot of that is buses that nobody rides because I see these empty buses out there. So we've got to look at how we're spending the money. It sounds cliche, but it's just a fact, because we are not seeing a decline in revenue to the fund.
Joe Scully is the president of the Motor Transport Association of Connecticut. Joe, thanks for coming on with us today. Have a good flight, and thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. In the studio, Joe McGee, Vice President, Public Policy and Programs for the Business Council of Fairfield County. Do we need to have tolls, raise fares on the rails? How do we fix it?
Yeah, we need more money. And I think every study that's looked at that has indicated that there's a revenue shortfall in the state transportation fund. And he is right. I mean, revenues have increased a bit in the transportation fund from gas sales. But what he's not addressing is we have an enormous backlog on improving bridges. You know, the Waterbury Mixmaster is $4 billion. The four bridges on the New Haven line are each $1 billion to fix. So your motor transport guy has got to address that question. We need more revenue in the transportation fund. Our rail system is not at a state of good repair, and we have delayed that where New York has moved forward with that. So the idea that somehow there's enough money there and it's all going to pension funds is just not true. We have a crisis in our transportation fund. We do not have the funds to really rebuild and maintain our rail and highway system.
State Senator Tony Boucher is joining us today. The senator is the co-chair of the legislature's Transportation Committee. Senator, when you hear all the talk about putting tolls on, raising fares, what do you think?
Well, you know, I am an individual that has been fairly outspoken about the lack of necessity to add tolls to Connecticut's cost structure at this time. Not that I'm against tolls. I think tolls may be the way that we may have to go down the road for sure. But because of Connecticut's very oppressive tax structure, cost of doing business, the cost for individuals that are just living here or trying to retire here, it's not a good idea to add to that burden. I've been talking to a number of residents here. There are nurses that tell me that they work across the state line into New York. They are actually nurses for the VA there, and that for them it would be a devastating cost and would really cause their family to think about crossing over the line and living in New York instead of Connecticut. Now, that being said, if we were able to, and this is a good time for it since our tax revenues have actually gone up quite a bit, to take a look at other costs such as the car property tax that states with tolls don't have. If we could remove some of those added costs and replace them then with tolls, then I think we have a reasonable case to be made. I had the trucking industry on a minute ago. You have a great individual that I've known for many years, Mr. McGee, from Stanford on. And I can tell you that the trucking industry is correct when they talk about there are other ways to fund transportation where money is being diverted for purposes that don't address our roads or our rails. The trucking industry is undergoing a shift in a sense that we want goods on time next day that make it difficult for anything but a truck or a postal service that uses trucks to be able to deliver. So they are very necessary to our new economy that we have. But in fact, I would disagree that that the fringe benefit cost of state employees is not a driving force of shifting and taking monies away from transportation, because in fact, the transportation commissioner tell us that one of the reasons that he lacks the funds that he needs for our roads and rails is because his administrative fringe costs are so high. And we hear that not just from our transportation commissioner, but also the head of our higher educational institutions are saying exactly the same thing. And we have data, national data, to prove that our administrative costs can be anywhere from 6 to 9 times greater per mile than our neighboring states.
Senator, we have had a number of emails, voicemails. We want to get to one of them. We heard from one listener who said drivers are already paying way too much.
Oh, yes, just in your program, and one of your pundits mentioned that being a driver, unlike a rail commuter, that driver isn't necessarily paying for the road's upkeep despite the taxes. Well, I believe the whole point was once we eliminated the tolls in Connecticut was we implemented a gas tax at the pumps. That's kind of my big concern with implementing tolls here in Connecticut is that essentially that gas tax is still in effect, and now with tolls in addition, we're paying double for it. So is that changed? Just curious. Thanks.
Well, and not just that, can you add to that that when we took tolls out, remember, Connecticut had tolls when it had no state income tax. When they took them out, they received additional funds from our U.S. Congress, from our federal budget, that compensated not only for the loss in revenues of tolls, but it added even more money. So you have to look at the fact that we didn't lose that revenue when we took out tolls.
Jim Cameron is a well-known commuter advocate. He's joining us today also. Jim, I'm thinking right now of the person who is listening to this program, which we're doing live at 1 o'clock, but is listening tonight at 7 o'clock. They're stuck on the Meritor 95, and they're thinking, you want me to pay for this?
Yes, and your question is?
The question is, how do you tell them that, yes, they need to pay for it?
Well, I mean, the condition of the roads, as we saw last night, are a direct reflection of the lack of enough money for the transportation department to be doing its job. I mean, the bridges are in a state of disrepair. Reports come out on an annual basis from engineering groups who grade us either at a C or a D. Remember the Mayanus River Bridge collapse? I mean, everybody that's saying, you know, I pay a gas tax. We used to have tolls. We got rid of them. Forgets the fact that, as Joe McGee pointed out, we have neglected spending the money that we need to maintain our infrastructure, both on the roads and the rails. And folks, the bill is coming due. You know, we saved all that money by not spending it for all those decades, but now the bill has come due. And that's why I, as a rail commuter advocate, even support the idea of tolls. It should not be free to be driving on highways in rush hour, whether you're in a car or a truck.
Jim Cameron is with us. You're listening to The Full Story. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Welcome back to The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. Today we're talking about transportation and how to fix the roads, the rails, everything involved with it. But I want to take just a moment to tell you about Monday's program. Congressman Jim Himes, 4th District, is going to be here. And I know many of you have many questions about what is going on the national scene, as well as in Connecticut and the 4th Congressional District. Get those questions in now. Email us, tfs@wshu.org. Tweet at Full Story WSHU. Leave a voicemail, 833, call TFS. That's 833-225-5837. We're talking about, mostly right now, we're talking about the roads and the rails. There's another component to this story. Our bridges, which were built many years ago, many of them are in bad shape. Joining us now is Carolyn Kelly from the nonprofit group TRIP, a national transportation research group. Back in September, Carolyn was the author, I should mention that she was the author of two studies that basically took a look at a lot of the situation with the bridges going on in Connecticut. Carolyn, thanks for being with us. What did you find?
Thanks for having me. You're right. We took a look at the condition of bridges across the state several months ago. What we found that in Connecticut, there are more than 300 bridges that are structurally deficient. What that means is that there's significant deterioration to at least one of the major components of the bridge. Now, as I said, these 300 bridges in the state carry 4.3 million vehicles every day. So if you're driving over a bridge in Connecticut, there's at least a chance that it's structurally deficient.
My first thought, I'm hearing this for the first time, I'm in my car, I'm at home, and I'm thinking, are they safe? Do I have to worry when I'm driving over them?
We understand that the term structurally deficient can sound very frightening, but it's important to keep in mind these bridges are safe for travel and that they're maintained and monitored on a regular basis by the organizations that are responsible for their upkeep. But many of them do need significant repairs or replacement. And if it's determined that they need those significant repairs that can't be done, these bridges would be either closed or posted for lower weights. But as you can imagine, having a bridge that's closed or posted for only lower weight vehicles has a tremendous impact on emergency response vehicles, on school buses, on farm equipment. So it can be very disruptive if these bridges are in a condition that would require them to be either closed or posted.
How did they get to be in this condition? Is it just a matter of that they're old?
That is part of it. In fact, the state of Connecticut, 59% of all bridges are 50 years or older. Now, that 50-year mark is important because bridges of that age typically have what's called a design life of 50 years. And so that's typically when they were built, that's the age where they do need replacement or significant rehabilitation. So like I said, in Connecticut, 59% of all bridges are 50 years or older. And of the structurally deficient bridges, their average age is 69 years old. So it's no wonder that they're getting to an age where, just like people, they need significant repairs or, in some cases, replacement. But it really comes down to a lack of funding. And there's just not enough funding available at the local, state, or federal levels to make all the repairs to the bridges and to the rest of the transportation system.
Carolyn, final question. How much? How much to fix it?
We've not put a price tag on that, but the cost would be very significant. And as I said, it's important that the state makes adequate and sufficient investments in the transportation system to make sure that the bridges are safe for travel and to keep the state's economy moving efficiently over these roads and bridges.
Carolyn Kelly is from the nonprofit group appropriately named TRIP. Carolyn, thank you. We appreciate your time. Please come back.
I certainly will. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Gilday is joining us on the phone. He's the chairman of the Connecticut Commuter Rail Council. Jim, we've been talking a lot. No, he's not with us yet. My apologies. We will skip him and we'll get right back to him in 5 minutes. We had him on the list, but instead, Joe McGee continues to be with us. I keep hearing about it's going to cost this. It's going to cost this. This is going to be expensive. And my head is spinning with the amount of money that needs to be spent on it.
Yeah, we have delayed spending money. I thought she made a very powerful argument. I mean, we've known this data for quite some time. We have an older bridge system, highway system, and rail system. It was built in the 50s. It's now reached the end of its lifespan. I mean, the Waterbury Mixmaster is unbelievable. If you think about where Route 8 and 84 come together, I mean, that's estimated at $4 billion alone to rebuild all that. So this has to be done. So yes, it's going to be expensive. We've delayed doing it, and now the price is coming due. And it's fine for the senator to say there's plenty of money there, but give me a break. I mean, the business community has been on this now for 5 years. We have to have an investment plan for transportation, both highway and rail. It's slowing economic growth. And to simply say there's more than enough money and it's all the pensions' fault is outrageous. We need a new revenue source and a stable revenue source to fund our share of the cost of rebuilding our highway and rail systems.
Senator Boucher?
Well, I respectfully disagree. I think that we've shown it by creating a plan that we've put on the table that takes a look at our current bonding capability, which bonds, by the way, are for these long-term assets that are going to be around for, as you just said, 50 to 100 years. In fact, your discussion about it's just not the bridges that are under our roads. It's also the bridges that carry our railroad, which we have one glaring example of a 118-year-old bridge that's in the process of being fixed. We definitely need a short-term and a long-term plan, a vision for transportation. We've had multiple administrations, and I've yet to see a plan carry itself forward where you have cooperation of both the legislature and the executive branch to continue to be consistent in moving it forward. The good news was this last year, this last budget, the majority party did accept $100 million worth of ideas from that plan that we put forward to actually invest in transportation needs. We need to look at the money we have now. As was stated time and again, tax revenues are up. Gas revenues are up. Where is it all going? And by the admission of the DOT itself, they tell us it's going into the very high administrative costs, which by any account in comparison are much higher than New York or New Jersey, either on average for wages, certainly for health care, and certainly for pensions. This is a great opportunity with a new administration to address this in a serious way, because we have other problems as well. By the way, we should enlist our federal representatives, because a good deal of this must also come from a federal transportation department, because some of these needs, especially long-term, and if we're going to change our rail beds in order to accommodate modern rail cars, it's going to take enormous amounts of funds in the billions of dollars to really improve what we need here in Connecticut.
Jim Cameron is still with us. Jim, you sent an open letter, which I found fascinating. You sent an open letter to Governor-elect Ned Lamont. Can you summarize for us your thoughts about that in that letter?
Well, I made a number of recommendations. The first was that I hope he keeps the current DOT commissioner, Jim Redeker. There is no more experienced, smarter guy who knows the challenges that are going on in Connecticut. I also suggested that he move forward with his idea of tolling trucks. It may not be legal, but I think it's an important first step to start tolling all vehicles on the road. And, you know, let me say something about Senator Boucher. She has been for 22 years one of the strongest and best friends of commuters, especially rail commuters in this state. And I think she deserves an awful lot of credit for the things that she has done over that period of time. Unfortunately, she lost her reelection campaign. And I think one of the reasons she lost it was that she was buying into this lie that tolls are a tax. She lost. The gubernatorial candidate from her party lost. Scott Franz lost as well, too, in Greenwich. The lockbox passed. I think that the appetite for the American, Connecticut especially, motoring public is we need to find the money. Maybe we're spending too much on administrative costs at the DOT, but let's stop blaming state employee contracts for what is really an underinvestment by this state in the billions that we need to make this transportation network work.
Did we lose Senator Boucher? No. Senator,
I
know that you have to go soon, so
that's
I'm going
okay.
to give you some
I'm
time.
I'm still here. Absolutely. No, you, as was stated, I'm very passionate about our transportation needs, and particularly our rail commuters, which we should remind everyone are some of the highest taxpayers of our state. We need them here, and we need to provide them with a better commuting experience because we can easily lose them across the line into New York. One of the things that I bring up often is that Connecticut seems to be proud of the fact that they only subsidize 25% of a rail ticket for commuters, whereas New York subsidizes 50%. So they are much more generous and provide a more attractive option for our commuters. And we absolutely need those individuals to continue to want to be here in Connecticut. And one of the things that they complain about is that right now their rail commute has gotten longer and longer. Anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes makes a big difference in their calculation of whether where they want to reside. I also wanted to, and I do need to go to another event, I wanted to thank you very much for the very kind words. I appreciate it very much. And, you know, I may have lost the ability to vote, but I certainly haven't lost the ability to weigh in and certainly be a voice of support. I think that it's very possible that tolls might be in our future. Certainly with the new administration, it looks very likely. However, I think they should be very cautious about adding the cost of living in Connecticut generally, and be careful about how they proceed with this, and hopefully reduce other costs in order to reintroduce additional burdens on the state taxpayers, because we want to keep people here. This is a state that we love. It's a state I'm passionate about, and I'm very grateful, and that's my parting word, so grateful for the great opportunity of being able to participate for so long in such a wonderful process in our state government.
Senator Tony Boucher is the co-chair of the Transportation Committee. Senator, we appreciate your work. We appreciate what you've done for us, and we are grateful you came on the program today. I hope you come back in the future.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. We are continuing our conversation with Jim Cameron and Joe McGee. We're talking about transportation. I'm going to switch it up just a tiny bit. We had talked in the past before. We've talked about tolls, possibly increasing the fares on the rails, congestion pricing. For those who don't know what it is, can you explain what it is and why it maybe should come to Connecticut?
Sure. Congestion pricing is pricing travel by time of day. So during rush hour, you would pay more, and during non-peak hours, you would pay less. The idea behind it is to improve congestion, is to force people who don't need to be in rush hour out of it by pricing them out. So trucks, which are a big part of the rush hour problem, you increase the toll or the congestion, that's congestion pricing. And that is critical. If we're going to improve highway throughput, you've got to get trucks out of rush hour.
We do have a voicemail about congestion pricing, which came in the other day. Let's listen to it now.
And obviously, with technology where it is, that's not an issue now. The second issue is with charging truckers more during peak hours. Can understand the logic behind that. That model applied to parking in inner city works well. However, don't forget that it may substantially drive up the cost of doing business in Connecticut insofar as having to schedule drivers and deliveries off shift. People are going to have to be paid if they're going to have to drive off shift to make a trip affordable, or it'll just drive up the cost of business dependent upon, you know, where it falls in the pricing structure. Just two thoughts there. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for the call. And if you want to join in the program, you can email us at tfs@wshu.org, tweet at @FullStoryWSHU, or leave us a voicemail, 833-CALL-TFS. Jim Cameron, is congestion pricing the way to go?
Absolutely. I mean, your caller makes an important point. Yes, it's going to drive up the cost of delivery of those goods. But, you know, why is it that trucks are on I-95 in rush hour? It's not because they delight in being in bumper-to-bumper traffic, and they're not the ones that are to blame for congestion. It's that the big-box stores demand that they deliver their truckloads worth of stuff at 9 o'clock in the morning instead of 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, I think the trucker does not want to be driving on the highway at rush hour. They're only there because their clients, their customers, have told them they should be there. They would much rather make a quick, speedy delivery to Walmart or Target at 3 o'clock in the morning and be on their way, moving on and making money someplace else.
Joe, is Connecticut ready for that societal shift? You and I were speaking before off the air. As a former New Yorker, I still go back to the city a lot. I see the trucks making deliveries at midnight, 1 in the morning, as Jim was saying, 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. That would have to happen around here, and schedules would have to change.
Yeah, but there's a difference between Manhattan and the suburbs. Our zoning separates out residential zoning and commercial and retail. So we don't have a lot of residential built into where there's big box stores. So the idea that all of a sudden trucks are going to be on Merton Street at 3 in the morning, that's nonsensical. The other issue, though, is this conversation with retailers is going to have to happen. The delivery times are going to have to shift. But let's be honest, we've got to get people to work. We have thousands of people coming to work every morning, and they are our primary concern. And the shipment of goods is critically important, but that needs to be adjusted.
I need to step back to some conversations that I had a few weeks ago with some friends, and I was telling you about it the last time you came and visited with us. I haven't found, and I understand, and I hear everyone saying, we're in a hole, we need to do something. Revenue has to be raised. I don't know one person who is willing or in favor of tolls or raising the gas tax or anything else, even though, and I just had this conversation yesterday with someone who works here at the radio station. They're just opposed to it. You mention it, they're against it.
So let me ask you a question. The lockbox passed by 88% of the vote. Senator Boucher led the fight against it.
I hear you.
Scott France led the fight against it. They lead the fight against tolling for transportation. They're both long-term Republicans defeated. It doesn't take a genius to put two and two together. The public is way ahead of the politicians. Nobody wants to pay more. But the fact is, we know these roads and rail systems have got to be invested in. It's part of growing the economy. Why do we have a slow-growing economy? One of the major problems is congestion and getting people to work. These things are connected. And to simply sit there and say, I'm going to hold my breath and I'm not going to pay a dime more in taxes, well, guess what's going to happen? You probably end up losing your job.
Jim Cameron, is it a zero-sum game? If Connecticut doesn't spend the money now, if they don't put the tolls in, are the businesses simply going elsewhere?
Yeah, or they're going to, you know, not be able to attract employees to get to the jobs. You know, we're the only state up and down the East Coast. I think there's 14 different states that have tolls. And let's not forget the fact that when I drive to New York and I drive to Massachusetts, I'm paying a toll. But New York and Massachusetts cars and trucks driving through Connecticut are not paying a toll. Yes, they're paying a different tax if they are a truck. Something like 40% of all the traffic coming through this state is getting a free ride. So we can't exclusively tax them. That's unconstitutional. But I think we should all be willing to pay our fair share. You know, time of day pricing makes sense. I pay more to take the train at rush hour than I do off peak. It costs more to see a movie on a Saturday night than a Tuesday afternoon.
Jim Cameron is with us. Jim, I'm going to ask you to hold on for 1 second. We have to take a very short break. You're listening to The Full Story. We'll be right back. We are back on The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. We're talking about transportation, but I need to tell you about the show on Monday. 4th District Congressman Jim Himes will be with us. If you have any questions or comments for the congressman, we ask you to get them in now. Email tfs@wshu.org. Tweet at Full Story WSHU. Call, leave a voicemail, 833-CALL-TFS. That translates to 833-225-5837. Today, talking about transportation. Email from John and Trumbull. I have lived here in Connecticut for 13 years. I feel a lot of these issues will be mitigated in the next 10 years with the advance of autonomous cars. Also, why are we talking about 100-year-old bridges now? Was there no vision to replace, repair these antiques 20, 30, 40, or 50 years ago? Thank you, John. Thank you, John. And he has a good question.
He's got a real good question. That has been the problem in Connecticut, that these bridges that are 100 years old, we have known we needed to repair them, but they're expensive. And so we didn't. And it's just like we didn't fund our pension costs for 30 years, and now the price has come home to today's group to pay it.
So, Jim Cameron, did they just kick the can down the road, and now we're paying for it?
Did they kick the can down the road? I mean, this state has been in such denial about the long-term costs of its pensions, of the maintenance of its highways, its rails, its infrastructure. I mean, its electricity system, the water system in this state. I mean, yeah, the way you get reelected for the past 20 years is to not raise taxes. Well, I'm sorry, folks, the bill is coming due, and it's much more expensive now than it would have been if we had made those investments decades ago.
You know, you're not going to be the most popular guy at the party. You know that, Jim, right?
I'm not looking for popularity. I'm looking to be able to drive across a bridge without the fear it's going to collapse.
Yes, and I will add to this, the younger generation of politicians coming up, the ones who just recently got elected, they understand this very clearly. The failure of their fathers and grandmothers to do the right thing and invest in the infrastructure of this state, they are well aware of. So there's a generational shift going on here, and I will tell you, the younger politicians coming up realize they can never do this again.
But, you know, we just got through the campaign. And the Republicans were saying, and the Stefanowski people were saying, you put Ned Lamont in there, you know what that's going to mean. Tolls, 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 taxes going up.
Yes, and the public voted for Ned Lamont by 50,000 plurality. The tax issue failed in Connecticut. The Republicans had the wrong strategy. Tony Boucher on your show just 10 minutes ago is talking about issues totally unrelated to the cost of repairing bridges and trying to make it about pensions. This is about improving transportation infrastructure. So that doublespeak that the Republicans pushed was roundly defeated in this past election.
The public
is smarter than the politicians.
Jim Cameron, I go to Europe and I go to some cities and I see those beautiful rail lines that they have and I see the beautiful roadways that they have and I come back here and I see this. At times I say to myself, why don't they just tear the whole thing up and start from scratch again?
Well, I mean, do you know what the gasoline tax in Europe is? Do you know how much it costs to ride those beautiful trains?
Yes, I do.
You know, Europe, well, and it's very expensive. And you get what you pay for. And what we're getting is we're not getting what we're not paying for. So would it be wise to just rip everything up and start anew? No. I mean, how are you going to possibly going to keep I-95 open, even with something as ridiculous as the idea of widening that highway?
That's one of the proposals, answer. Right? Just a few months ago from one of the gubernatorial candidates.
And it was ridiculous.
Yep. And somebody else suggested double-decking I-95, which is equally ridiculous. The solution to congestion on I-95 and the Merritt Parkway is to make our trains more attractive, affordable, more parking at the stations, greater frequency. I mean, that's the way to get people off of the highways, to get them onto mass transit. And by the way, your earlier guest who was referring to, you know, buses that nobody rides, complete BS. I mean, CT Fast Track, the rapid transit system between New Britain and Hartford, has carried 15 million passengers. There are a lot of people in this state who don't own cars. they need to get to their jobs. You would deny them access to employment so they can't make money, feed their families, and pay taxes by eliminating mass transit? Just ridiculous.
Joe McGee, let's talk about the gas tax for a moment. How much does Connecticut charge nowadays? I believe it's around 2 bits, 25 cents?
Yeah, 25, 26 cents. Yep.
Should it go up?
No, I think, you know, the issue is going to be if you do institute tolls, and I'm not sure 86 tolling stations is appropriate, but if you introduce it and it does raise $1 billion, I think the question about what do you do with the gas tax, what do you do with the gross receipts tax is on the table. But the tolls by themselves are not going to pay for the all the requirements to improve our infrastructure. So we have to be realistic about that. But yeah, I think a more modest gas tax would be appropriate. But the most important thing is we've got to have enough money to improve this transit system.
Jim, are you in favor of a slight increase in the gas tax as long as all the money goes for road and rail improvements?
Well, that's what the lockbox referendum gave us. It gave us the reassurance that money from the gas tax, similar revenue sources, would be spent on transportation. Yeah, I'm open to the idea of lowering the gas tax a little bit if it's going to be, you know, added on to with tolls. But again, we're not giving any break to riders on Metro North. I mean, the person who's going to be driving on the highways and paying tolls is still getting a much cheaper ride than passengers on Metro North, who pay the highest commuter rail fares in the United States because the subsidy is the lowest.
You and I have spoken a little bit on the phone, and one of the things that you should know about me is I'm a big believer in climate change. I believe it's here. I believe what the scientists have to say. And with that in mind, with what they say, our shoreline, our coastline is going to have to change. At some point, those rail lines are probably going to have to shift. Is the Department of Transportation taking this into account now, or plans being made for the future? Because I understand everything that you're saying about improving the rails now. But I'm also thinking, if you want to spend the money doing certain things, shouldn't you be saying we need to take this into account?
Well, the Federal Railroad Administration and Amtrak have proposed a high-speed rail system that is nowhere near where the tracks are today. It would be on elevated structures, probably moving along the I-95 corridor right-of-way as well, too. So, I mean, they're thinking out 50, 100 years. No, Metro North is not going to change the right-of-way that we have today. The most expensive real estate in the state is along the coast. So they're not going to realign those tracks and raise them any more than they are now today. Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you. I believe in global warming, and I think that it's ironic that the people who also believe in global warming, who are buying electric cars like a Tesla, are paying zip. They're paying nothing. They're getting a free ride because they're not paying for gasoline. They're not contributing to the gasoline tax. There's some irony in that, I think.
That is going to be one of the topics in just 1 minute from now. Before we do that, our associate producer, Christian Carter, went out the other day. And he went around the area and he asked some people about whether or not they would actually pay for tolls.
I really think that out-of-state vehicles should be paying tolls.
And not Connecticut residents.
We pay everybody else whenever we go anywhere.
Tolls on the highway, I am willing to pay for some of that. On I-95, possibly, but not too much. It must be fair and reasonable. And there must be alternative routes for people who cannot afford those tolls on highways.
And that brings up a very interesting aspect to this, because I'm old enough to remember the tolls that were on 95. And I know what some people did who did not have the money. They simply got off in Port Chester. They got off before the ones in Norwalk or Stratford. They went on to the post road. They found back roads, if you will, to avoid the tolls. Do you think that would happen again?
Some of that. But we've looked at other states that have tolls, and people are not getting off the Jersey Turnpike to save 25 cents.
Jim, does that worry you at all? Do you think it's okay?
No, I think some cheapskate, somebody of lesser means might do that for a week or so. But time is money, even if you're making a minimum wage. If you want to cheat on a 50-cent toll by getting off the highway and wasting 10 or 15 minutes to do so, be my guest. What we have seen in Rhode Island, where they had put in tolls for trucks, they were expecting a fair amount of toll evasion. They've not seen it, because to the trucker, time is really money, and they would rather, although they may not want to, pay a toll and keep moving on that highway. I think one of the advantages, especially of timed tolls by time of day, is it's going to reduce congestion on the highway. The person who's paying a toll will actually get a faster ride, because the people who don't need to be on the highway at that hour will be priced out of the system. There'll be fewer cars in front of you. Or maybe, I'd love this, they'll take the train.
We have about 5-6 minutes left. Younger people are leaving the state. I know there's a big push, a huge concern as to how to attract them, how to make them stay in Connecticut. A lot of the younger, I'm going to call them kids, the kids that I know have no intention of owning a car in the future. I mean, none whatsoever. It's not like when I was young, the first thing I wanted to do was I wanted my dad's car. I wanted to buy my own so that way I could go someplace. They want public transportation, or they're going to take Uber or Lyft. So how is this? How should we take this into account for the future in terms of the transportation planning around here? Or will it have any effect at all?
Oh, no, it's huge. It's what's driving economic growth in Connecticut. If you look at the most expensive property in Stamford today, it's around the train station. And it's both housing and commercial. 20 years ago, it was up on High Ridge Road by the Merritt Turnpike. So there's been an enormous shift with millennials, younger people who really want to live and work around train stations because they want that mobility. They go back and forth to Manhattan. They go back and forth to New Haven. That is the new paradigm for economic development. That's why investing in rail is so critical. We have a project right now that we're going to be announcing probably in 2 weeks. We did a study for 6 months, hired outside consultants on how to improve the New Haven line. And the New Haven line, which is not at a state of good repair today, for a modest amount of money could be brought up to a state of good repair, and you could cut 24 minutes off the trip from New Haven to New York. That's what's going to drive the economy in Connecticut. This new rail line from Hartford to New Haven, everyone in Hartford said, no one's going to take the train. That train is packed. So the public is ahead of us, and younger people in particular are really wedded to mass transit and Uber. It's a different lifestyle than what we grew up with.
Jim Cameron, are you seeing that also?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, but remember, even if it's an autonomous self-driving vehicle, or it's driven by an Uber or a Lyft, you know, driver, it's still got to be on the same highways. We're not seeing a reduction in that kind of mobility if people need to get from point A to point B, and public transit's not going to get you there. So I'm not owning a car. I may be living in an apartment building downtown that doesn't have to be built with a huge garage anymore. Joe is absolutely right, as on, you know, so many different issues. Transit-oriented development is the way to go. We need to invest in housing, offices that are closer to transportation. You know, affordable housing is the reason that people have to be on I-95 crawling from Bridgeport to Stamford every day. They can't afford to live where they work. So they have to take mass transit, or they have to drive on the highway. When we can start to live closer to where we work, there will be less congestion on our highways and trains.
And the other issue to add is autonomous vehicles, that's real. That trend is going to explode over the next 10 years. And the impact of autonomous vehicles on highways, but also transit, we're just beginning to understand that. And that's going to reshape the way we get around.
Just with the few minutes that we have left, we had talked before about possibly raising the gas tax by just a small amount. But at the same time, many people I know are buying electric cars. They're buying hybrids, plug-in hybrids. What is that going to do for the revenue in the state?
Well, that's why you can't rely on the gas tax as your source of revenue, main source of revenue for transportation, because while it's increasing lately, over time, electric vehicles are going to dramatically decrease the revenue from that source. So, yeah, you need a broader revenue source, and charging for the use, a use fee is a good fee. You know, it's not a tax, it's a use fee. You're using it, you pay for it.
Jim, electric cars, good thing?
Yeah, absolutely. We own a Prius. I'd love to have a Tesla, but I'm not quite up in that income rank yet. Yeah, I think electric vehicles make a lot of sense. We cannot rely only on a gasoline tax. But again, let's remember, last Tuesday showed us that people are, as Joe said, are smarter than the politicians. Tolls are not a tax. They are a user fee. Just like train tickets. You know, you don't get a free ride on the train. You get a free ride on the highway. If I want to take the train at rush hour, it costs me more than off-peak. So should driving on I-95 or the Merritt or 84.
We have 2 minutes left. With those 2 minutes, I thought that your open letter to Governor-elect Ned Lamont the other day was excellent. If he were sitting here right now, what would you tell him?
I'd say, congratulations. And as I said in my letter, condolences. The easy part is over. The campaign is the easy part. Delivering on the promises that he made is the hard part. I think he needs to be open and honest with us about the huge deficits that we're facing. I hope he moves forward with his proposal on tolls, initially with trucks, if that's what makes him happy. I don't think that's legal, but I think it'll be a good way of introducing tolling to other vehicles as well, too. And I hope he's smart enough to keep the guy in office who's the commissioner of the DOT, Jim Redeker. We cannot afford to lose him and all of his experience to some other state that's smart enough to pick him up.
Joe McGee, you have the final minute.
Well, I think there needs to be a change in the leadership of DOT. I think in the last 8 years, we have not had the focus on transportation that we needed to have had. And many of the improvements in transportation were started under either Roland or Rell. And so I think there needs to be a new commissioner of transportation. I think that's critically important. But more importantly, I think the new governor has a very big opportunity to reach out to new players and engage them in the political process around the building of policy and political support for change. Because we need economic growth in this state, and investing in infrastructure is the way you get it.
Jim Cameron, we thank you for your time, as always, and please come back again. Thank you, Jim.
I'm happy to do so. Thanks.
And Joe McGee. Joe McGee is vice president at the Business Council of Fairfield County. Joe, thank you.
Thank you.
We also want to thank Joe Scully, who was on at the beginning of the program, the president of the Motor Transportation Association of Connecticut, State Senator Tony Boucher, the co-chair of the Transportation Committee, and Carolyn Kelly, who is from the nonprofit group TRIP. Now, coming up, I think I told you earlier on Monday, Congressman Jim Himes, and I hope you join in the program. And you could always leave us voicemails and emails and tweets beforehand. And we hope that you recover from that storm yesterday. And we hope that you enjoyed the show on transportation. And that is it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari, Carrie Frank is the digital editor, Cassandra Bassler, senior editor, Ann Lopez, producer, Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for listening to The Full Story. He has been in Congress since January 2009, and now that the Democrats will be in the majority in the House of Representatives, his duties and power will be increasing. He says he is always willing to work with his Republican colleagues. Still, at times, he has been a thorn in the side of President Trump. 4th District Congressman Jim Himes will be with us next time on The Full Story.